today are services that I used in the past, and then they became sponsors, which makes it super easy. Have you ever thought I should really be doing something to protect myself from stalkers? Well, I mean, scammers and hackers. You're not sure what? Well, here's what you do. You go to www.joindeleteme.com/majority. You enter the code majority. You get 20% off. Delete Me removes your personal information that is being sold online, and you would be shocked to know how easily available and what information is available. I've been using Delete Me for over a decade, in part because of really all of those reasons. Initially for me, it was more just like general security. I don't want my address out there readily available for people for whatever reason. During the Air America days, I used to get hate mail, and it was not pretty,
okay.
Not fun. I was worried about my family. But since then, of course, identity theft and phishing scams have proliferated. Scam calls. I mean, the only downside to Delete Me is that it does such a good job in scrubbing my information from all of these data broker sites. I never get any more of those fake phone calls.
Hmm.
And that was one of the funnest things I had in my life, was to get a call from those people and keep them on for 20 minutes.
Such a
It helps with phishing. It helps with, right now what they can do is buy stuff on the dark web, combine it with stuff they buy in a broker, a data broker for $5 or whatever it is. And they could steal your identity. They can send you emails, get you phishing. There are scams all over the place. And now in the age of AI, we're vulnerable to scammers using your personal data against you. They're going to start using they're going to go on there. They're going to find relatives, and they're going to end up like creating little relative bots of yours. But now you can get an individual plan for little as over $8 per month. Discounts get even better with a 2-year plan when you enroll with your partner or family. Delete Me does all the hard work to wipe your personal information from data broker websites. They repopulate, and Delete Me keeps doing it on a regular basis. I want to thanks to Delete Me for sponsoring the Majority Report. Take control of your data. Keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our audience, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to www.joindeleteme.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout. The only way to get 20% off, www.joindeleteme.com/majority. Enter code majority at checkout. That's www.joindeleteme.com/majority. Code is majority. We'll put that link and information in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Also, another service I used for years before they sponsored, Fast Growing Trees. They are America's largest and most trusted online nursery. They have thousands of trees and plants, over 2 million happy customers. They got plants for your home. They got plants for your yard. They got fruit trees. They got privacy trees. They got shade trees. They got flowering trees. They got shrubs. They got tall grass. They got, chokeberry bushes. Pawpaws.
Wow.
Yes. Don't sleep on that. Everybody should be growing pawpaws. I'm starting to think, like, when I retire, pawpaw orchard. That's just one of the ideas I got.
That sounds great.
But it doesn't matter what you're looking for. Fast-growing trees help you find options that actually work for your climate, space, and lifestyle. Fast-growing trees makes it easy to get your dream yard. Just click, order, grow, and get healthy, thriving plants delivered to your door. They have an Alive and Thrive guarantee. It promises you that your plants arrive happy and healthy. You don't need a green thumb, just quality plants you can count on. Plus, they got trained plant experts who can help you plan your landscape, tell you which stuff to grow, and you know, based upon your zone. choose the right plants. Oh, I've got a, on this side of my house, where's the sun? Okay, here are the plants you need. Is it going to be fully shaded? And they can give you all sorts of tips. Super easy. And the beauty of fast growing trees is they have an incredibly wide selection, much better than your box store. You got I don't know how many different types of apples, but I mean, a wide range of apples, and really, frankly, any other fruit tree, but so much better than a box store. Plus, you don't have to get dirt all over your car as you try and shove it in there, break mm-hmm. the tree. And here's the thing. I don't know if the trees grow faster from fast growing trees, but you can buy a 6-7 foot tree. They ship it. They do a great job of shipping. And within a year, you can be picking a Hosea pear. Okay. I get pretty excited about it. Right now, they have great deals on planting essentials, up to half off on select plants. Our audience gets 20% off your first purchase when using the code MAJORITY at checkout. That's an additional 20% off. Better plants and better growing at fastgrowingtrees.com. Use the code MAJORITY at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com. Code MAJORITY. Now's the perfect time to plant. Let's grow together. Use MAJORITY to save today. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Put that in the podcast and YouTube descriptions as well. So Donald Trump, over the course of the weekend, announced on Truth Social that,
as you do,
we had struck, of course, a deal with Iran. And then it comes out like, well, we're 95% there on the deal with Iran, and the 5%.
Do you want to read the what Trump said?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But this is.
Have
this
you
is,
seen it yet?
This yeah. is after. This is after the reports of the deal come out. So the timeline, it's tough to maintain the insanity. And I may need actually a bigger version.
Yeah, do we have a magnifying glass?
Yeah, can you punch
it's
in
like
on
a
that?
Scroll from the Wizard of Oz.
It really is a presidential
a
decree.
Just so people can see the whole thing.
Yeah, see it once, okay. And then we'll cut down. But so then apparently what happens is people freak out. All the neocons, all the Israeli boosters in the administration, Netanyahu, et cetera, freak out. And he comes out with this. Will you post the truth?
The one, okay.
Yeah. And can you zoom in or no?
It won't be legible.
Yeah, let me find
He's finding a better version.
Send me one that I can read here. Sorry. Maybe I got it in the Slack. And this is, yeah, here it is. Okay, hold on. Okay, I got it. I will read this. Gotta take a deep breath. Negotiations with the Islamic Republic of Iran are proceeding nicely. It will only be a great deal for all or no deal at all. Back to the battlefront and shooting, but bigger and stronger than ever before. Nobody wants that. During my discussions on Saturday with President Mahmoud bin Salman al-Saud of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Zayed al-Nahyan of the United Arab Emirates, Emir Tamim bin Hamad bin Khalifi al-Thani, Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Yassim bin Jaber al-Thani, and Minister Ali al-Fawadi of Qatar, Field Marshal Saeed Asim Munu Ahmed Shah of Pakistan, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey. Look at the way I spelled Turkey. That's the way I like to spell it. I like to spell it like the Turks.
I like to respect their culture.
Yes. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt, King Abdullah II of Jordan, King Hamad bin al-Khafil of Bahrain, I stated that after all the work done by the United States to try and pull this very complex puzzle together, it should be mandatory that all of these countries, at a minimum, all of these countries, simultaneously sign on to the Abraham Accords. Those countries discussed are Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, already a member, Qatar, Pakistan, Turkey, that's the way I spell it, Egypt, Jordan, Bahrain, already a member, It may be possible that one or two have reasons for not doing so, and that will be accepted. But most should be ready, willing, and able to make this settlement with Iran a far more historic event than it would otherwise be.
If I don't hit a certain word count, Susie Wiles doesn't give me credit for my homework.
Yeah, somehow we are not even halfway through.
The Abraham Accords have proven to be, for countries involved, the United Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, Sudan, Kazakhstan, a financial, economic, social boom, even during this time of conflict and war, with the current members never even suggesting leaving or taking as much as even a pause.
What?
The reason for this is the Abraham Accords have been great for them and will be even better for everybody and bring true power, strength, and peace to the Middle East for the first time in 5,000 years. Hold on. You're a lady. I get to finish.
Just getting started.
Yeah. Right. Okay. It will be a document respected like no other that has ever been signed everywhere in the world. Its level of importance and prestige will be unparalleled. It should start with the immediate signing by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and then everyone else should follow suit. And if they don't, they should not be part of this deal, and it shows bad intention. In speaking of numerous great leaders mentioned above, they would be honored, as soon as our documents are signed, to have the Islamic Republic of Iran as part of the Abraham Accords. Now, wow! Now that would be something special. This will be something, the most important deal of any of these great but always in conflict countries will never, ever sign. Nothing in the past or the future will surpass it. Therefore, I am mandatorily requesting, I repeat, I am mandatorily requesting.
It's a mandatory request.
Yes, it's a mandatory request. That all countries immediately sign the Abraham Accords, and that if Iran signs its agreement with me as President of the United States of America, it would be an honor to have them also be part of this unparalleled world coalition. The Middle East would be united, powerful, and economically strong, like perhaps no other area anywhere in the world. By copy of this truth, I am asking my representatives to begin and successfully complete the process of signing these countries into the already historic Abraham Accords. Thank you for your attention to this matter, Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. You know,
he hit the word count, the requirement, I guess. Jesus Christ.
Emma, you, the disdain. I am not the one who wrote this. I'm just reading it. So.
I just, yeah. Yeah.
So I know Stephen Miller wrote this, right? Like, I mean, we know it's not Trump.
Gas went up 25 cents in the time it took
exactly.
You to read that.
Exactly.
Needs Cory Booker's diaper just to read that whole
exactly.
thing.
I know.
But for whatever reason, and it's unclear to me, like, when was that? The Truth Social came out when? When was this Truth Social that came out? I think this came out.
Yesterday morning, I believe.
Okay, Sunday morning, and it coincided with all of the Iranian war hawks, i.e., Israel support. I don't supporters.
Yeah,
I mean Israel surrogates.
Their assets
in the U.S. House. Now we have said this many times over and over again. That the reason why Chuck Schumer has been all but invisible, has been leading from behind, and by leading from behind, I mean like holding, being an anchor for the Democratic caucus to not move towards sanctioning Israel, conditioning aid, whatever it is because the leadership of the Democratic Party, not all of the leadership, but what appears to be a significant chunk of it, is in favor of this war. Now, they can't come out and say it because it is so incredibly unpopular with Democrats. I mean, but it's also unpopular with independents. And it's not terribly popular with Republicans. And so the Democratic leadership cannot come out and say, we're for this war. But when the chips are down and they think that it might be resolved, they send out a couple of their faves.
Dribs and drabs.
She used to be the chair of the DCCC.
DNC.
No. Was she the DNC or the DCCC?
Debbie Wasserman Schultz, DNC chair.
Right. And
during 2016.
Now she is a congressperson who may be losing her seat in Florida. Here's Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
I am concerned and frustrated over, again, another potential deal, a negotiation for a negotiation, where we're going to unfreeze Iranian assets and give them billions of dollars to be able to control proxies again and to rebuild their ballistic missile program, never mind their drone program, which is incredibly deadly, and they've been increasing their drone capability. So this is deeply concerning. And look, I'm glad that Iran, their capability militarily has been degraded. But if what we get from this initial deal is just going back to where we were before, where Iran did not control the Strait of Hormuz, then what has been accomplished? I am.
Oh, you know what? Actually, you're on to something there.
What has been accomplished?
What was the whole point of this? It was completely stupid. And there's something called cutting your losses. But the problem is, for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, this isn't like, there is no losses to cut.
No.
They want more. She is working for Netanyahu and the entire Israeli project. And incidentally, not only did they not understand Iranian society enough that their entire plan to supposedly install Ahmadinejad, apparently, and that they thought if they assassinated Iran's top leaders that the country would just topple, goes to show you that, A, not only are our interests not aligned with Israel, which I think is quite obvious, but B, Israel, there should be no assumption that they're competent in any of this stuff, that they have any idea of what they're doing other than being driven by some type of like fanatical desire for some greater Israel that involves occupying and annexing more and more land.
I mean, and that's been the case the entire time. Israel is giving rosier assessments of Iran's weakness, and they have been doing that for decades to presidents. This was just the president whose ego was large enough and his intellect was weak enough that he was going to agree to it. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing that Democrats like Debbie Wasserman Schultz will preach bipartisanship and the electoral supposed benefit of looking reasonable by working with Republicans when it suits their donors. But this is a rare example of when bipartisanship would actually be beneficial in terms of like praising Trump for doing negotiations, because the war had 60% disapproval at the outset. You look reasonable if you're praising him for doing diplomacy. Instead, she's serving the Israel lobby here. Israel is escalating in Lebanon, moving past the yellow line, bombing the hell out of Lebanon to sabotage what seems like a pending deal, expanding their ground operation in the south to take more and more territory. So at the same time as Israel's doing that to sabotage it militarily, they have its assets in the United States doing work rhetorically for them.
No,
Cory Booker's another.
Side deals.
Yeah.
No side deals. And then, you know, you have your congressperson coming out in the Democratic Party. Now, let's have a senator come out and talk about how we're very concerned about this. This is the same guy, if I remember correctly, was on one of these Sunday talk shows criticizing Obama in 2012 for demonizing Bain Capital.
Oh, yeah.
Because he knows a lot of private equity guys, and they're good guys. Is it one of the remaining moderate Republicans or right-wing Republicans? Is Josh Hawley? No. It is Cory Booker.
This better than the deal Obama got with Iran?
So we haven't had an official briefing, but this is what I'm seeing that has me so outraged right now, is the president said he went into this to deal with their nuclear program. This does not deal with that. Before he became president the first time, they had no highly enriched uranium. They had sent it out. Now they have it because of him. Number two is he criticized roundly that the deal that got rid of their nuclear program, or at least their highly enriched program, involved getting $50 billion for Iran. Well, already the president's balance sheet is letting more than $14 billion go through, that during this conflict he allowed them to sell oil. And this deal alone, easing of sanctions on Iran, allowing them to get billions of more, the same deal he criticized, he's already doing worse than. Giving Iran more money, as he has said, will allow them to do things like fuel their proxy, terrorist proxies. That's why this war is wrong. He's got us in a situation that's worse than it was before, a more extreme regime. The Strait of Hormuz now is a leveraging point for them. This weak nation has put America in a stalemate, and Donald Trump is being played as a fool.
So Cory Booker, I looked it up because it's interesting that Chuck Schumer was adamantly against the JCPOA. Cory Booker supported it at the time. Now, I think, put us back up, right? Yeah. Just for Brian. I think, like, it's notable. I mean, you can take it two ways. One, that the Zionist lobby quadrupled down after the JCPOA, and they were successful, and they had more and more money, and they were able to get their hooks into more Democrats that were willing to take it. Or also that Cory Booker was movable on this, yes, in the money that now he's criticizing Trump basically along the same terms that he would the JCPOA, that we're going to unfreeze Iranian assets. That was a part of the Obama deal as well. But now he's criticizing it from as a Democrat against Donald Trump. One, I think, because the Israel lobby has gotten even more powerful. But two, it shows that leadership matters on this front, that if there were a Democrat in office that had the fortitude to stand up to the Israel lobby, that some of these senators would be squishy enough and they would go along with their party because that's where the momentum is. We have a leadership vacuum that's allowing for hawkishness on the Democratic side to be rewarded and overrepresented in the caucus.
Let's remind everybody about Chuck Schumer's last time he weighed in on the idea that there could have been a deal. No, not this one. The last time he weighed in on the idea of Trump making a deal with the Iranians. And of course, he's laying low because he took a lot of grief for this video that he shot last time.
All over the lot. One day he sounds tough, the next day he's backing off. And now, all of a sudden, we find out that Witkoff and Rubio are negotiating a secret side deal with Iran. What kind of bull is this? They're going to sound tough in public and then have a side deal that lets Iran get away with everything? That's outrageous. We need to make that side deal public. Any side deal should be before Congress and, most importantly, the American people. If Taco Trump is already folding, the American public should know about it. No.
No side deals. You know where, I find it really hard to believe that Witkoff and Kushner don't have side deals. That they're going into these Iranian negotiations without side deals with the UAE or the Saudis or Israel.
The peace deal is the side deal.
I mean, are you kidding me? Exactly.
The Cuban Missile Crisis.
The whole Abraham Accords is the side deal.
The Cuban Missile Crisis was stopped with a side deal.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of the Abraham Accords, just to bring back what Trump is saying there, he continuously is doing this on Truth Social where he's undercutting the negotiations by saying the most insane crap possible. You think you could just decree online that every country in the Middle East that has been reticent to do so should sign on to the Abraham Accords?
It's not a decree. It's a mandatory request.
Why hasn't Saudi Arabia done it already? I don't know, because even though they're a monarchical kingdom that we prop up, there is still resistance among the populations that they lord over to normalizing relations with the genocidal settler colonial state of Israel.
Well, it's a mandatory request, so they have no choice. Here are some of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Cory Booker's, and Chuck Schumer's, thought partners. This is number five. Mike Pompeo and Victoria Nuland. Pompeo, obviously, the Secretary of State under Trump 1. Nuland has been a longtime, like, blob member. I think
she's in the State Department under Biden.
Biden, yes. And here they are in some type of a debate among debates. I'm not terribly thrilled with it. Arguing against Mersheimer and Stephen Walt about the Iran war. And Pompeo Newland at one point, like, this is becoming like an increasing tell. I noticed this when I was talking to what's her face? Jillian
Michaels.
When she had no response or anything, she just really uncomfortably laughed. And these guys, what a laugh riot this turns out for them.
This is what human decency demands. You don't let a radical regime close off the global economy by firing Shahed missiles into nations that did nothing. Right, they're firing into civilians in the United Arab Emirates even just this week. That's just not something that the world can accept. And so this monster is worthy of the hunt.
You do know, Mike, that we started the war.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Oh, no. No, no, no.
They weren't firing those missiles until Israel and the United States attacked Iran. You do understand.
Welcome to 1979 when the revolutionary regime began to kill Europeans.
You do know that we overthrew the democratically elected government in 1954.
Just for the record, you were talking about this.
You don't think Iran has, you think Iran's forgotten about that?
No, I suspect they've
you
not.
You don't think Iran remembers that we supported Saddam Hussein in the Iran-Iraq war?
I know they've forgotten about this. I know that
other countries have history.
Do you think Iran is a monster?
No.
Okay.
Well, pause it for a second. First off, like, honestly, like, this guy was the Secretary of State. Do you think Iran is a monster? Iran is a country.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, honestly, like, are you four? Do you think Iran is poopy pants? Do you think they're poopy pants?
Yeah.
Who's poopy pants? Who's not poopy pants here?
I mean, you're accurately
a monster.
You're accurately describing the mentality of a racist.
It's just like
They consistently underestimate Iran due to just abject racism and Islamophobia.
And what is the measure of monsterhood? Like, be more specific about what you're talking about. Do we think the Iranian regime is democratic? Do we think the Iranian regime oppresses its own people? Do we think the Iranian regime kills people outside its borders? Do we think the Iranian regime is occupying creating third-class citizens? I mean, there's other countries in the Middle East where you could apply these very specific measures. But that's why you call it a monster, because then it just becomes this sort of like vague, amorphous thing. And this is what children do. This is what children do.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I know that
other countries have history.
Do you think Iran is a monster?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm glad I don't live there. I think many countries do many bad things, including my own. And I wouldn't call the United States a monster.
But Stephen,
also remember that we wouldn't have had October 7th if we hadn't had Iranian support for Hamas.
I agree. We wouldn't have had October 7th if we'd gotten peace in the Middle East, and that's a much longer story.
It is, and every single U.S. president has tried and will continue to.
Not very hard.
But it is very important to emphasize there's no evidence that Iran even knew about October 7th, much less.
Oh my goodness. Right.
Mearsheimer is right.
Listen, this is my point about them laughing, because they do this when they have basically got to the end of their argument.
This is just what U.S. intelligence says.
Yes. We have
Iran even knew about October 7th, much less.
Oh my goodness. Right. I'm sure it is lovely to live where you live and believe that. There's no evidence in the public record of that. Oh my goodness.
Well, let's pop up. We have a link for this. To the extent that you can believe them, and I'm not sure why the intelligence agencies, the U.S. intelligence agencies indicate Iranian officials were surprised by the Hamas attack on Israel.
If you read deeply
into the reporting, Hamas in the years prior had tried to pitch Iran on it, and Iran was never terribly interested. So I don't know by what means that they mean like Hamas wouldn't exist were it not for Iran. In fact, if there is a but for in terms of Hamas's existence, it has to be the Israeli government. The Israeli government midwifed the birth of Hamas out of the Muslim Brotherhood. It promoted Hamas as a way of dividing the Palestinian body politic so that Fatah had a rival. This is well documented. In fact, there are quotes from Bibi Netanyahu. But in terms of like executing October 7th, this was not Iran's project. And so, and the idea of like, why does Iran have these proxies? Well, think about where they have these proxies. And they have these proxies surrounding a country that it has been for 40 years, by Bibi Netanyahu's own description, been looking to topple the regime and bomb the hell out of the country.
I mean, she's probably correct that if there hadn't been, any Iranian resistance, that perhaps there wouldn't have even been Hamas at that time, because Israel would have just taken the entire Gaza Strip by that time period.
I don't know that it was Iran that was in any way holding Israel back from that, other than like...
Well, their allegiance with Hezbollah and Hamas, right? I guess in theory, that's the one case that you could make. But the point is that resistance to Israel's expansion is a good thing.
Well, yes. And I think and that's part of the dynamic.
That's what they're
admitting.
But they
also created Hezbollah. Yeah. There was no Hezbollah when Israel invaded Lebanon in 1982.
Yep.
These arguments that go back 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years and try and argue. The problem is like that. I think these neocons are having is that just more people know the history now. And so what used to be, and I think like at one point on this show, I don't know if it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I was just like, I'm not debating what happened anything more than what's happening today, because it has gone back and forth. There are enough villains on every side, but the reality is the reality. And one of the big tricks that I think Zionists have done is attempt to keep going back in history, but it's failed for them now because more and more people are aware of the history and there's more and more access to it. And so now the way they do it is just sort of like giggle and laugh and try and make it seem like somehow these people are completely out of their minds.
You're an unserious person.
I'd love to live where you live.
Do you agree Iran's a boogeyman? No?
How dare you?
We said monster. Oh, you're the fool who doesn't think that there are monsters are real.
I don't think monsters exist, are you serious? You probably don't think ghosts exist either, do you?
All right, let's. I wanted to mention the primaries today too.
Oh yeah.
There's a runoff. It's not really, I guess it's still the primaries, I guess, because it's a runoff in Texas. As you know, Donald Trump has endorsed Ken Paxton in this runoff in Texas. And it's a fascinating choice because I don't know if there is a single person still in office who has been accused of more criminal activity while in office, outside of maybe Donald Trump.
I was going to say the president.
Yes, yeah. Right. This is solidarity with another crook.
I mean,
it's good to have a vulnerable guy.
I mean, he sees himself. I see myself in you.
This is classic Survivor show.
Right.
Play. If Ken Paxton's out there, I'm the second guy they come for. Because he's so much weight. He's so ostentatious.
He was accused of abusing the power of his office on behalf of a donor, shocker. And it was so bad that the Texas House actually impeached him. The Texas Senate ended up acquitting him. But think about how corrupt you have to be as a Republican for the Texas House.
Which
to...
is Republicans.
There was something like
yes, impeach you.
There was something like eight people working in his office who were all like senior people working in the DOJ, or not the DOJ, the Attorney General's office in Texas, who blew the whistle on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how, and I imagine they were not all Democrats.
No. His wife, who a part of these proceedings is actually a state senator, she listened into the proceedings, and part of what came out was that he was having an affair with a Christian influencer.
Yep. In 2015, he had felony security fraud charges. He and then the impeachment.
But he's not Somali, so who gives a shit?
Exactly.
Good point.
And here is a good, I think, like, and there's every reason to believe that he's going to win because of this Trump endorsement.
I mean,
at least in the primary runoff. And here's a good, I guess, foreshadowing of what might be problematic for them in the actual general election in terms of the Senate.
I've been talking to voters here in Brenham County, and I met the cutest couple, Gayla and Michael Stephan, and she's an independent, he's a conservative, and they don't agree on everything politics. Take a listen.
Your thoughts about Cornyn and Paxton?
Well, it's not a great choice, either one, really, but I think I lean towards Paxton, for sure. He's local. Cornyn hasn't always been with the Republicans the way I would like, but it was a tough choice. But I did vote for Paxton on the runoff.
What are your thoughts about Paxton?
And crook. Yeah, that's it. Period. He's just a crook.
I've been talking to voters.
There you go.
A house divided.
The way she looked at him patiently as he answers. Oh, I know what's coming.
How has Cornyn not been with the Republicans? Like, what is his voting?
I'm going to see if he's ever broke
January
once.
6th, right?
Trump.
Oh, was he nervous?
I think he did a January 6th, like, this is not the best thing
yes.
I've ever seen.
Yes, even though his voting record, when you look with Trump, 99. That's him betraying the truth, that Trump equals Republican Party. I mean, we saw this with the Massey story, too. I know that was a lot of AIPAC money flowing in and Israel money and all that, but, like, goddamn. The whole primary voter base is captured by the cult of personality that this man has engendered. It's just the rest of the country hates it.
According to Cornyn's website, 99.2% voting along with
Well,
Trump.
Okay. What was going on with that other 0.8%?
This is some polling at the very least here from Tallarico versus the two.
Tallarico looks to do much better against Pax. Scroll down to so we can see the comparison. I guess it's not terribly different.
More or less tied with Cornyn, yeah. And has like about almost a 2-point lead on.
But there's no doubt what the Republican Party wants, which is that they think Cornyn is a much better general election candidate.
Yes.
I mean, that woman. That wife seemed to indicate it, that, like, in the state, he's known as a crook. That's a problem for them.
When you're talking about a crook versus a rhino.
Barefoot granola eating rhino.
When you get into the general, it's much easier to vote for the Republican in name only than it is the person who is not a Republican, even in name only. For these people, they'll never vote Democratic, but she may go into that voting booth and just not pull the lever for the Senate. If Paxton, that's the difference,
vote
right?
Down
there.
Ballot or not show up.
That's the difference. Is I can't vote for him. He's a crook. And I'm not going to vote for Tallarico, but I'm not going to vote for that guy.
Tallarico is so interesting, though, because I got to say, like, those type of women, they're not going to be the way they're painting Tallarico. Like, he's this Christian guy, but he's not an atheist. He's a vegan. And he's like, says there's like, God says there's six genders or whatever, like woke stuff. I'm sorry. Like, I think a lot of Christian women behind the privacy of a ballot booth will vote for that over like someone who's just a philandering crook.
You're 100% right, I think, about that instinct. They're so worried about women right now. That's part of the RFK Jr. retreat and the fact that they switched all like the Surgeon General pick and everything with the MAHA stuff. They're losing certain white moms that were okay with a lot of the racism. And now it's like, wait, why is there this measles outbreak 20 miles away? And what's wrong with the economy here? And why can't I afford childcare? And I'm a little bit squeamish about ICE cracking skulls and separating families and putting them into detention camps. I think that's going to be a problem for them.
And doesn't the vegan thing...
It's not true.
Like, well, I mean, putting that aside, I mean, I get the idea that, you know, we're in Texas, we're supposed to eat steak all the time.
Yeah.
But... doesn't the whole premise of the MAHA thing mean like you
no,
don't?
No, they eat all meat. Like RFK Jr. is just filled with red
the
meat.
Seed oils on
of course he does. But my point being that not that vegan's not the slur it used to be. It's no. Very hard. Let's put it this way, and I think maybe younger people don't understand this. It used to be a slur. I mean, the idea that like these vegans in Brooklyn, you know. They're so worried about what they put into their body. Well, the whole MAHA premise is, you know, like seed oils.
I know.
It's really hard to try and stigmatize vegans when you're out there, you know, talking about like, we can't have sesame oil. That's bad.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a really, that's very thinly sliced. I think as to who is going to get critiqued.
I think they're in for a rude awakening if they think that they can ride the gender and the vegan thing through a cratering economy and Trump's approval rating being historically low. Like, that crap worked because of the Biden administration and the Kamala Harris campaign's incompetence. But you're not running as an outsider anymore. You're in power. No one wants to hear about this.
Yeah, maybe the vegan will get my gas prices down.
Exactly.
Well, or it could be like gas prices are double, but at least we don't have a vegan in the Senate.
And I do think that, right, at least like with Paxton, all of this stuff about his ethics, it's a bad contrast with Tallarico, more so than Cornyn.
Yeah.
With the whole Boy Scout thing that he's got going on.
He looks like his mom licks a comb right before she combs his hair.
Exactly right. He's like elf on a shelf energy from him.
All right, since we're talking about primaries, let's just do number 20 and then head to the fun half, wherein we are still anticipating a very special guest. He's busy, so sometimes it falls through.
James Dolan.
Tom Steyer is up for the... governorship in California. The primary is Tuesday, a week from today, actually. And as it stands now, I don't know where he is in the polls. Is Becerra still up?
I'm not sure about the polls, but I think everybody that is kind of left of center seems to be coalescing a little bit around Steyer. Despite his billionaire background, he's running in the right way, and Porter's campaign's kind of fallen apart. So I guess Jennifer Welch had him on.
Let's hear.
You talked about trans people. I'm totally in favor of trans athletes in high school. I think when you understand the vulnerability, the stress, the danger of being a trans kid, and you understand that almost half of them try to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And then you think we're going to punish those kids. We're going to cut them off from team sports. We're going to cut them off from participating in the community. We're going to cut them off from fun. It's like, no, we're not. No, we're not. And, you know, as someone who played sports my whole life and loves sports and love playing sports, they're more important things than whether you start on your high school basketball team. And that is standing up for people who are under threat of death. You talked about trans.
That might be my favorite answer I've heard on that issue. I mean, absolutely incredible. Exactly right. Exactly right. It's about a question of priorities as a society. Do we feel it's a priority to protect the sanctity in your idea of this one kid's volleyball team or soccer team? Or is it more important to make sure that trans kids feel excluded in society and are not isolated from the joys of being like any other child. That is the point. It's a question of priorities. And we were joking about this with Victor Wembanyama. Like, he's 7'4" and he gets on his tippy toes to tap in basketballs. Like, you want to talk about unfair physical advantages? You could make a case, hey, in the NBA, you can't be this tall. You're just too good, absolutely. Victor Wembanyama.
And but I don't even think he's 7'4". He's like 7'6".
I mean, the athleticism adds a few inches. I'm joking about this because it's just so silly, right? And there are taller women. There are stronger women. There are stronger girls. There are taller girls, what have you. This is not a serious topic. And I just am just, like, happy to see that Stiers running right towards wokeness. Woke 2.0. We're going to make fun of you, and we're also not going to give an inch on trans issues.
Yep. Good stuff. That is next week. All right, we're going to take a break and head into the fun half. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you also get the fun half. And folks, one of the ways you can support this program is to tell your friends, is to pass clips around, it is to give us a thumbs up, smash the like button on YouTube, go in and give us a good podcast rating. YouTube has been a little bit funky as of late. You may have seen other progressive shows saying that, you know, viewership is down. Viewership is not really down, but one of the things I have noticed is that we are not reaching as many new people as we used to, which suggests to me that there's some algorithmic change that's been going on. Who knows what that's about? Maybe just people who those people are just don't want to do politics, but send stuff around, expose it to your friends. That's another way to help us with the show. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckie and media universe?
There's a Left Reckoning coming up right after the show today, this afternoon, where we talk about the insistence that the people are upset with the economy and it's just vibes and they don't really understand how good it is. Annie Lowry had another piece that, like, people...
Are you seriously doing that?
Yep, they're just so negative, and actually you don't really understand. There's no reason to say this economy is worse than the Great Recession, as if, like, we all didn't live through the Great Recession and don't just see this as a snowballing.
Are people saying that this is worse than the Great Recession right now?
I mean, the sentiment charts are more negative, and people are...
Well, I think part of that is because the Great Recession came out of nowhere.
Exactly.
We live in history. We're just sort of like in a slow motion, like, we see what's coming, I think.
All the liberals are saying that we're trying to argue the economy was good under Biden are saying, like, yeah, see, people are so ridiculous that they think now is worse than the Great Recession. We live during both of them. These are compounding events.
Yes.
We aren't, like, isolated in different parts of history. I don't understand how some of these stats people, like, think the world works. And then they think that the world should follow their graphs. But yeah, anyway.
Math.
History over math every effing day.
Yeah.
Folks, see you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous? You're a little bit upset? You're riled up?
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 238. 56, 27, one half, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.
We are back, Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland, Majority Report, fun half, day after Memorial Day. It's not officially summer, but it's like unofficially summer. It's getting warm. Big piece in the New York Times. Maybe you guys can pop this up there. How prediction markets and crypto firms steamrolled a watchdog agency. You know, like my thinking during this era, I mean, thinking is really not even the right word. The state of duress I'm in during this era shifts from what's actually happening and to like how massive of a job it is going to be to have to fix all this.
Yeah.
Like, it's much easier to destroy things. We've talked about this. It's obvious, I think, to most people. And I think it's hard for us to understand that in an administration, there's only so much resources, right? It's not unlimited. And so when you're building up agencies, when you're dealing with like, we got to vet these judges, we've got to vet these candidates for these agencies, like you need people. There's only so many people who are going to be able to do it. You have only so much money to be able to pay people to do this stuff. And so there's always these trade-offs. But the problem that we're going to have with the next Democratic administration, knock on wood, that it actually happens in 2028, is that they're going to have to fix everything. Yeah. I mean, imagine moving into the house you just bought and the electrical wiring needs to be rewired because it's 75 years old.
Or it's been taken out and sold for parts. All
yeah,
the copper.
Somebody took out all the copper. The plumbing needs to be repaired. The gutters. Oh, no. Actually, the roof also. Jesus, the siding. There's a huge, huge bee's nest. They've taken over the whole wall. And then the other wall has black mold. I mean,
and yet they built a massive indoor pool. That's what the ballroom
is. Yes, exactly.
So the house is falling apart, but they built an indoor pool with a hot tub and a waterfall,
but
you know,
problem
for
is
safety.
You go in and even if you had all the money in the world, just to make the assessment of what's wrong, to find the people to go, you know, I got to find 50 different contractors to fix all this stuff. That's difficult to do. And so all the stories of these different agencies that have been completely gutted and destroyed, understand that, like, we have also lost, in some instances, decades of institutional memory of civil servants who served under all different administrations, who knew how to do this stuff and knew what the problems were. Maybe they didn't have support at different times. Maybe they, you know, had bumped up against what they were allowed to do, whether it was a Democratic or a Republican administration. New York Times has a big piece on three companies: Crypto.com, Polymarket, and another crypto firm, Gemini, or a subsidiary of Gemini. Mm-hmm. They each have ties to the Trump family's business empire. And when they first got in there, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission oversees a lot of this because some of the stuff gets securitized. And betting, I guess, they also have oversight of. Piece reads, senior career officials, will you pull this piece up if you can find it? New York Times, how prediction markets and crypto firms steamrolled a watchdog agency. Senior career officials worried about whether Crypto.com was treating small bettors fairly. They feared that a second firm, Polymarket, did not have strong enough protections against fraud.
No.
A third, an offshoot of the crypto firm Gemini, had yet to pass the agency's required review to open for business. Despite these concerns, Caroline D. Pham, who was the then acting chairman of the commission, and her senior counsel intervened to help the firms get what they wanted. This is according to people familiar with the situation, spoke on a condition of anonymity. Pham was appointed to the CFTC by Joe Biden because they get Republican appointees. So the president traditionally goes to the Republicans in the Senate. Who do you want? Okay, and they appoint that person, because, and then the next time, ostensibly, Democrats get theirs. But, of course, Trump went in, fired everybody, and she became acting head. And guess, you will just hold your breath. You'll never guess where she's working just months later. By Christmas, the agency had put two top officials who had raised questions about the companies on leave, barred them from the office, placed them under internal investigation. Three other senior officials who had enforced laws involving cryptocurrencies, another industry linked to the Trumps, suffered the same fate. So five of the top officials were basically harassed out of their job. In the past, none of those officials were told what they had done wrong, but current and former agency staffer said in interviews that the commission's work force took way too clear a message. Don't cause trouble for those industries. In the past 16 months of the Trump administration, the commission has shrunk its workforce, purged career officials, sharply curtailed crypto enforcement, and helped out prediction markets at virtually every turn, the New York Times has found. The CFTC's transformation has been muscled through by leaders with connections to those industries. Ms. Pham recently left the agency to work for...
No.
Okay, understand, she was appointed during the Biden administration. She served as acting head for, a year, 9 months. Took out all the people who were going to harm crypto and predictive markets. And now, can you guess where she is working? Ms. Pham recently left the agency to work for a crypto company that has a partnership with Polymarket.
Shocker.
But her senior counsel, Bridget Wales, she's no longer at the agency either.
It's not spelled W-H-A-L-E-S as like the crypto whale would be.
No, it's W-E-Y-L-S. Was hired by a prediction market company whose application she helped shepherd. Aww. That's so sweet.
All she had to do was just rename her house the Poly Market Studios.
Live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A.
I've been through an almost equal number of Republican and Democratic administrations, and there was always a belief you have to have strong enforcement, said Gretchen Lowe, a 30-year agency veteran who retired last year from top enforcement job. This is really the first time that the politics have affected the CFTC in such a dramatic way. Check this out. Don't want you to think that they're asleep at the wheel. The CFTC has announced only two cases involving digital currencies since the beginning of the Trump administration. That contrasts with more than 80 such cases brought during the Biden years, either in civil court or administratively. Even during Trump's first term, before his family turned into a crypto juggernaut, the CFTC announced more than two dozen cases involving crypto. On the prediction market side, the agency has switched from an opponent to an ally.
No.
This in legal battles over how markets should be regulated. It has announced just one case in the second Trump era against an individual accused of insider trading. They are literally protecting and advocating on the side of less regulation. They're the regulators. Just a little more fun reading here. CFTC's watchdog role over speculative financial trading already gives it oversight over the prediction markets, a booming industry. The two leading platforms took in a total of $50 billion in trades in 2025. This year, they took that much in just March and April.
So there, it was interesting to see last week that some senators, even on the Republican side, were talking about how they need to be regulating some of these prediction markets. It reminds me of the regulating crypto push from Kirsten Gillibrand and what was it, Cynthia Lummis from 2 or so years ago, which is about them trying to cement an industry as opposed to like letting it run wild and potentially getting banned. Because there's no reason, it's not just an issue for the small time bettors on the prediction markets, which is a way to get around gambling regulations in many ways. This is a problem of like everything being heavily financialized. You shouldn't be allowed to bet on when the Gaza genocide is going to end. You shouldn't be allowed to bet on the Iran ceasefire. In general, it's not because lower level traders on topics like that are getting screwed because Trump is giving they're giving insider information to their buddies so they can make money off of it. It's just interesting how it's being framed and that now the Times is on top of it.
Statistically speaking, you have a much better chance of winning in a casino than you do on these. And even just calling the predictive markets, I honestly think is like an offense.
Eye roll. Yeah.
It's a gambling site. It's just that you can gamble on anything.
But we can't call it gambling because that might involve actual regulations.
It was always
gambling.
Yeah, what can we call it? Ugh.
As of March, the CFTC had about 550 workers, fewer than since the depths of the 2009 financial crisis. But understand, they only cut, I would say, about a quarter of their workforce, maybe a third. But they've cut all of the top leaders in the agency, all the people who had the institutional knowledge. So now they just have people in there who are just sort of like, I'm at the beginning of my career. I'm midway through my career. I got nothing. I can't. All I got to do is just whatever you tell me. A former CFTC intern who grew into a skilled networker, this is Ms. Pham, has moved back and forth between government and finance industry. Under the Biden administration, most cryptocurrencies were regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which treated them like stocks and bonds traded on Wall Street. This is why they wanted to get rid of Gary Gensler. But a quirk in how crypto is designed gave the CFTC authority over certain speculative transactions, including the trading of Bitcoin. This is just one example of like, how do you rebuild this? How do you rebuild this agency? You can give them directives, but you've taken out the people who had the most complete knowledge of all this stuff. So you've got to go out, hire these people. They, who knows, they're going to come back. These, you know, half these people are going to be retired. They're just like, you know, I'm done. Or they're going to be, you know, they're going to go into, they're going to move on. They're not going to sit around for 2 years. Hope that there's a Democrat and I can get back into my job. I mean, this, we're seeing this in the EPA. We're seeing this in the FDA. We're seeing this in the securities. We're seeing this in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, completely wiped out. We're seeing this in USAID. We're seeing this in the State Department. We're seeing this in, like, every possible agency that is not a profit center, essentially, mm-hmm. for, or a mechanism in which to feed the military-industrial complex. They're just being destroyed, these agencies. And rebuilding them is not as easy as, like, oh, we had to turn the lights back on. It's going to take, I don't even think 8 years gets you back to parity. And that's why, I mean, what is going to be crucial is A, fixing the Supreme Court first so that there's greater latitude for an activist government. And then B, we're going to need structural change because redeveloping this infrastructure through just regulations and is just going to be too slow and too difficult. That's just, that's the bottom line.
Yep.
Just to get everybody feeling a little bit depressed. Yep. I should also say, there's just a local note. Co-op, the Park Slope Co-op is voting tonight, I think, about BDS. This has been an ongoing thing at the Park Slope Co-op for almost 15 years. I used to be a member ages ago, and it was an issue right before I got there, I think. And it's a co-op, a small supermarket. I don't know, it's like 15,000 members or something. But I think it's a big sign because it's been something that's been very controversial in the past. And so if you're a Park Slope Co-op member, vote. You know, it's not, as a material matter, it's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of products, I think, probably that come in from Israel. I have no idea what they are. Like I say, I haven't been there in a while. But it sends a message, that is not terribly dissimilar from what it was during the anti-apartheid days, which is like, you know, Ronald Reagan wanted constructive engagement. We need to help. But we're not even at that point where the powers that be even acknowledge there is a problem in the way that they should.
Yes.
That you have to pretend like, oh, I know what to do. Let's just keep working with them. You want to play this one?
I just want to quickly talk about the New Jersey story, if I could just seven and eight here.
Yeah.
Big story in New Jersey right now over the weekend. There was apparently a hunger strike that was organized at the Delaney Hall ICE facility in Newark. Right, New Jersey's kind of been at the center of some of these battles with the federal government as it relates to ICE, because you have Representative LaMonica McIver, who's being charged federally for inspecting an ICE facility and demanding that that happen. I think Ross Baraka, who ran in the governor's race to the left of Cheryl, did not win. Was also arrested at the time, mayor of Newark. And this time, there were even more interactions between ICE and lawmakers here. But let's just start off with this video of ICE attacking some of these anti-ICE protesters in Delaney Hall. As I mentioned, there was a hunger strike going on there, and the wife of one of the organizers of the hunger strike was a part of these protests. His name was Martin Soto, and they were trying to get him to ship him out of this facility because he was organizing, and there were letters that were being leaked out about the conditions there. Horrible, rotten food, no medical care, boiling heat, and no shocker, this is run by Geo Group.
Holy shit! What the fuck?
Let's go!
So they were forming a human chain here.
We don't want ICE here!
And Andy Kim, who is...
Now, those local... they're saying it appears New Jersey local police...
Yes, it looks like, I mean, which is interesting because Cheryl herself has signed a law in New Jersey that really limits collaboration between local law enforcement and ICE. I would need to learn more about how diligent she's been on that front, but she did show up to the facility and was turned away as the governor of the state. And this is the junior senator here from New Jersey, Andy Kim, who got pepper sprayed.
I understand, but he's a senator. Respectfully,
still. You got the pictures over there. This is his picture.
So, pretty crazy. This is still going on, and the administration is still like leveling charges against two major New Jersey lawmakers, both of them people of color, obviously, for demanding to see these ICE facilities, which is their right, especially if you're a member of Congress, like McIver is. I know Mejia was there as well, Menendez too. So the Northern New Jersey Coalition is behind, at the very least, the protesters here and are showing up. Something to monitor, because this action is still very important and happening at the local level.
The next Bob Berger character writes, Vermonter here, laws saying local police can't help ICE are useless and meaningless.
Yeah.
World gone mad. Hello, team. Thanks for speaking the truth every day. Your whole team is blessed. Please invite Professor Karen Hunter, Dr. Greg Carr, Dr. Clyde Anderson, I think, and Roland Martin to speak on race relations leading up to today's administration. Bob Villain, the Knicks better not have the same fate as the Patriots after all the shit-talking Emma did.
I haven't been shit-talking at all. I don't do that about something this sensitive.
Crippling superstition.
Yeah, I don't know how I could look at my husband in the face and tell him that I abandoned my superstitious OCD and that was the result in something horrible happening.
Yeah, you certainly aren't processing through superstitious means like the fact that you saw one game in this Knicks run and it wasn't one of the good ones.
No, what do you mean? I went live to the only home game they have lost in the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
They have only lost one home game. They've lost 11 straight.
What if someone was to offer you tickets?
Yep.
Free tickets to
I was
home
just
game.
About to ask this.
I don't think we would go, actually. We both have said that this is unlocked this time.
I almost like it. Brian and I are thinking the same thing, and Brian's
Habsies.
Brian's thinking, will Sam go three quarters on it? And I do a quarter.
Yeah. Right. Habsies is a total bullshit.
I mean, I will go if you do.
Okay.
If you do, if Emma doesn't want that.
Maybe we should lobby Zoran for that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
In the future.
In a bit. Yeah.
Definitely not today.
Fluster.
Damn it.
The second surprise party that's been ruined for Sam in the last 2 days.
Yep.
Pack Omrad. Can my husband and I get a 1 year wedding anniversary shout out? We listen every day. You sent our Bella girl a send off this past March. Oh, yeah. Well, my condolences for that, but congrats on your anniversary. Jack from Queens. Tom Steyer was at an event wearing Class Traitor on the hat the other day. I understand being skeptical, but I really get the sense he is coming from a good place.
At least how he's running. I mean, and you saw the posters behind him, tax billionaires like Tom. It's clever.
Yep, yeah, and it's all relative. Yep.
Oh, well, we're giving shofars. Can we give one to my niece who just graduated high school? She listens to the show. Congratulations, wow. Audrey.
Audrey.
Well done.
Congrats, Audrey.
Happy graduation. Julian, unfortunately, is it Tracy Morgan?
I wish.
What a great metaphor for the U.S. government. We are like the Knicks have been since I've been alive. Born in 1999. Sorry, Emma, just had to take my shots. I'm actually quite happy for New York since I've been a lot of discourse surrounding Mamdani being a curse to the Mets, but I'm pretty sure New York City is a basketball town. If y'all win a chip, I can't imagine a single New Yorker being sober for a month. It is a little bit annoying that he decided to curse the Mets and not the Knicks. But Fanhausen, Dan Housen on the fun half confirmed. MJ617, Sam, has Hassan officially been subpoenaed? As of yesterday, he said he hadn't actually received one yet. I'm just going by that reporting. I don't know. I don't think so. But, you know, sometimes they can issue one and not necessarily deliver it yet.
Yeah.
California resistance. Sam, simply, history is today. Vinny, Sam, grow some Eastern red buds, too. Ex-hamster, bold move bringing on Woody Allen. Allen, I'm hoping it's Jackson Dart.
Is that because you did the such small portions joke?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Woody Allen's a diehard Knicks fan, too.
Yeah, he is. Doesn't get courtside seats anymore. I saw footage from the 1999 courtside, celebrity row, and Ben Stiller there in 99, still there in 2026. So, but Woody Allen was courtside, not happening these days, I think.
Do we have time to do the Platner stuff? I think maybe.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. We got two videos about Platner. It's sort of interesting what's going on here. Well, let's just do the number 10. Jake Auchincloss. Auchincloss.
Who has me blocked. Just found that out just this morning when I was trying to get his updated tweet.
Never even heard of this guy.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about him
Republican
before.
Republican dweeb?
Yeah.
Well, he is a former Republican. It's not like... But, you know, I mean, when you're from a deep red state, you know, a lot of times you see politicians. I was a Republican because I went along with it because it was a deep red state or even like a slightly red state. It's not. Oh, wait. No, what am I talking about? He's from Massachusetts. Oh, yeah. F that guy.
From like a dynastic family in Massachusetts.
Yes. I mean, it's not like he was alienated if he would be in a Democrat. So, you know, we know where his tendencies are, but you want to run for office, then you need to, be a Democrat. And he, is one, he is a congressperson. I think he's in his second term. And he had this to say.
I've been clear about Graham Platner. I find that tattoo and his commentary about it to be personally disqualifying. I hope Maine voters agree with me. I think there would be a mistake for the Democratic Party to think that Graham Platner's brand of the Democratic Party is what wins us durable majorities throughout this country. I've been clear about
you'd hate to think that. So what's implied there is this so-called Democrat is saying to vote for the Republican. They are doing the Zohran Mamdani thing in Maine. Congratulations. All you're doing is just isolating yourself further from the energy of the party when you refuse to endorse someone like that. Although it looks like he walked it back. We have that tweet.
Well, wait, I want to really like marinate in this a little bit, because what is he talking about? Is this guy not aware that there is no primary in Maine at this point?
It's an endorsement for Susan Collins.
It seems like he is aware of that.
I mean, I just don't understand, like, what he thinks he's doing. His personal sense of like his own. This guy has one reason to weigh in on this. One reason only. He's not a voter in Maine. He is a Democratic lawmaker. And there should be one agenda if you are a Democratic lawmaker. And that is to have more Democratic lawmakers. Period. End of story. And there is nobody who has spent 5 minutes engaging in politics who knows that Graham Plattner is not the Democratic nominee. And so this guy's going out there. It's one thing to say, like, look, wasn't my choice, but it is crucial the Democrats take as many Senate seats as possible. That's the way you do it. Wasn't my choice. That's the way you do it. But he is out there sniping at this guy. And basically doing what everybody who is like just has even the semblance of a brain backhandedly endorsing Susan Collins.
Especially when you know what he's the chairman of? Democratic Majority. That's the group that he chairs.
Is that some type of pack or is that like a caucus?
It's a pack. It's a pack. But supposedly he's supposed to be responsible for electing Democrats.
Yeah.
And yet,
it's like how Trump's responsible for getting rid of fraud.
And I just hope that all of the tankies online that are like acting, or maybe I shouldn't use tankies. I should use Green Party associated cranks on the internet that are going after Graham Plattner for the tattoo. I hope they feel comforted in understanding that they are on the same side as Jake Auchincloss and the rest of the Zionist lobby that are using the tattoo as a way to go after one of the senators that would be most vocal in trying to cut off money to Israel.
I don't know. I don't have a sense of who those people are exactly who are coming after Platt, because I have some feeling that some of them are like Auchincloss, like that it is their way of saying, I'm going to use the Totenkampf tattoo,
yep.
Which again, I will reiterate, I don't know how many times I saw all those movies. I guarantee you I saw more movies than the vast majority of the people listening to this program with Nazi uniforms. I used to play army men, and I did not recognize that tattoo. But that tattoo is used as a way of saying, I don't like a stance on Israel. And it's just a much safer surrogate in which to discuss. I mean, that's what's going on there. Now, apparently he backed off it because he got enough pushback, which is great. Because one of the beautiful things about having a candidate, a progressive who is primed to win, whether it was Mamdani, whether it is, you know, Chris Robb, is that it exposes people. They get, like, you saw it with Cory Booker. You know, like, there are people who hide. And then there are times where, like, push comes to shove and they have to expose themselves. We saw it with Gillibrand, with Mamdani.
Yep.
I mean, Schumer wasn't that well hidden. But it exposes people. And this guy just got exposed. And I think it's too late probably in Massachusetts to primary this guy. But honestly,
I mean, it's funny, too, like Cory Booker, remember when he said he doesn't do endorsements outside of New Jersey? He was stumping for the opponent to Chris Rabb in Philly. Yes.
Sharif Street.
Where's Philly at?
Yeah. Who just won that primary?
I mean, Philly's basically Jersey.
Susan Collins is a rubber stamp for the worst administration in history. Claims that I would endorse her implicitly or otherwise. Ignore my track record in supporting Democrats to take back both chambers. Well, you know what else it does? It just listens to your words.
Yeah. Yeah, why
as I said months ago, I find Plattner's Nazi tattoo and his commentary about it personally disqualifying. Okay, what is the commentary about it? That I didn't know what it was, and that the reason why it was going to get out in public was because I had my shirt off at my brother and sister-in-law's wedding, and half of the people in attendance were Jewish because she's Jewish. I wonder what the commentary is. If it were me, I'd vote for someone else in the Maine Democratic primary. You know what, dude? If your job is to message shit, it's too bad that it takes all of this for you to come out and say that. This is what you could have said before. I don't live in Maine. If I was to vote in this primary, I would have voted for somebody else. But it is absolutely crucial the Democrats take the Senate. Regardless of what happens in Maine, Democrats need to take back the Senate, and I'll keep working hard to make it happen.
Oh, keep it up,
buddy. Excuse me. You effing idiot. What happens in Maine will dictate whether the Democrats take back. There is no world in which the Democrats don't take the Senate seat in Maine, but take back the Senate. That doesn't exist.
You know what Mainers love? They love when people from Massachusetts tell them what to do.
Oh, yeah.
They love that. I know I do.
Honestly, like I say, the net of this is positive on both sides. It exposes Jake Douchenclos as for what he is. And it probably helps Plattner in Maine.
Well, but who?
Some rando right-leaning
Masshole
is...
If it were me, well, good news, it's not. I'd vote for someone else in the Maine Democratic primary. One of the people polling at 2% or lower, go for it. That's kind of where you're at in terms of the energy of the party, buddy.
Yeah.
You want it to be one way, and it's the other way, as you would say, Sam.
Well, I mean, I stole that from The Wire.
Okay, well.
But yes. I would say it to him. This pisses me off when somebody from Massachusetts acts like such a dick in public. We do it in private.
Famously. I've never heard the term masshole until today.
Yeah, I'm sure. Is that true?
No.
Oh. All right. So what do we got? Only just a couple minutes here. Let's read some IMs. Julian, unfortunately, in Alabama. Man, what an absolute moron. These establishment Dems are just terrified of a challenge to their grip on the controlling of the party. Without a doubt. I mean, understand, that's what's going on here. This is not about the tattoo for Jake Oshenslosh.
Yeah.
Okay? Right. It's not about the tattoo.
It's also about the commentary about the tattoo.
It's about the commentary about the tattoo. But it's not about the tattoo. And it's not just about Israel, although that's part of it. It is the entire package.
Yes.
They did not want Mamdani. They did not want him to succeed. They have run out of things in which they could attack this guy on. He's supposed to come in there comparing him to Spanberger. Spanberger also won. If you look at her popularity and his popularity right now, it is quite clear what's going on. And they are terrified. They are terrified. The precedent is everything. That is what they're nervous about. You know, I've told a story. We interviewed, I can't remember her name right now. Shannon Moore from Alaska. And she was a big fighter against the Pebble Mine fight up there where they were going to mine for, I can't remember what it was, right on the, I think it was Bristol Bay, and which is like where, you know, all the salmon come from in the world practically. And she had done a lot of work into this, and it was quite clear, like, there's no real value to them to mine in this area. And she met with their lawyers, and she said, there's no value for this. And they're like, we don't care about this one.
Right.
It's the precedent.
It's the next one. Yeah.
If you guys win here, we're in jeopardy in all other places.
Yep.
And that's what's going on.
I mean, the tattoo is to Plattner as Hassan is to Abdul El-Sayed. Like, it's just like a proxy to attack him, but not attack him specifically or on the merits of his positions.
It's also much more difficult on some level because it's like, he's not Muslim.
And right.
So they have to figure out something else. And the problem is, too, for them, is that, like, not only is Plattner not an anti-Semite, but the reflexiveness in which people respond to this has been exhausted because of disingenuous things like this. I mean, the question is not whether someone has a tattoo on their body. The question is that indicative of something?
That's why it's indicative.
It's a piece of evidence.
It's indicative for Pete Hegseth, but it's not indicative for Plattner because of their ideology, straight up.
And there's not only is there no other evidence, it's a complete absence of evidence. And not only that, it's the opposite. There is a ton of evidence that this person is not an anti-Semite. And it's difficult to prove a negative. But in this instance, like, it's fairly straightforward.
And everyone that's like, oh, he could be the next Fetterman. Fetterman was taking money from the Israel lobby. Look at Track AIPAC, or look at Track, you know, Oil and Gas, all these other groups that are tracking special interests with Plattner. He has a pristine record so far on what he has accepted financially. And that is what I care about. It's what we're supposed to care about. This is how we understand how power works, as opposed to, like, these kind of vague memes about what he could or could not believe based on Reddit posts and a tattoo.
I mean, these sort of centrists were just, like, a year and change ago talking about how we need to be less censorious so we can have a Joe Rogan of the left. But they don't actually have any principles besides they want to sell power to the people that buy their office for them.
Yep.
Cody Zeke, I've been a tattooer for 20 years. I worked in Waikiki tattooing tourists and military folks around that time. Graham would have gotten that tattoo. The designs on the walls in those shops are purchased in large bundles. There were totem comps on those sheets with zero context. I could totally see a group of young, dumb military dudes walking in and thinking it's just a cool skull and crossbones. The internet didn't exist in the way it did today, so those soldiers wouldn't have even gotten instant feedback that people do today on their tats.
There you go.
What are we? What's our sitch?
I'm reaching out.
Okay. Somebody. We all hate the Knicks. We all still hate the Knicks. Oh, jeez. That's mean. Jeet here, smoke alarm. Every Memorial Day, I get a firsthand glimpse into the right-wing parallel universe of misinformation. Did you know that Mamdani already opposed or already opened a grocery store in New York and it was immediately looted and forced to close in failure within 2 weeks? Wild stuff.
Who told you this? I had a little bit of a peek because I was, for this bachelorette party I was at, I was in a pretty red part of the country. And it was in northern Florida, and we had a captain. We had a little, did a little boat ride who very pointedly said, "We're going to the Gulf of America." Like, all right, great.
Al Knipchen, Sam, as a lifetime Spurs fan, I've been begging for a go Spurs go. If you're giving them out. Sure, I'm agnostic between OKC and the Spurs.
Oh, I'm not.
Who are you?
Go Spurs, go.
Oh, you're a big hardcore Spurs?
I can't stand OKC, no. I like Shea in a vacuum. Their style of play and their ref stuff is actually a problem, and people who are OKC fans should.
Okay, we got 10 more minutes.
And Wemby has got to be really easy. From a leftist perspective, if you want to go there.
He's great. It's just, honestly, it's...
Wemby's going to restore literacy to Gen Z.
Honestly.
Honestly.
Although I don't know what I want to come out of that series, but that's a whole different situation.
Hey guys, let's check in and see how Ben Shapiro. There is a remember I mentioned this. I've mentioned this many times about Ben Shapiro. Now we know Milo Yiannopoulos let the cat out of the bag on Tim Pool about a year ago, where he said they all bought their views. And he cited Ben Shapiro in particular. They bought their views. And this is number 12. They bought their views and they fake it until they make it. And so, in other words, they get up to the top of the charts. And with the way that things are, people, you know, watch the top of the charts. It really helped back in the day when there wasn't so many podcasts and we could be, you know, top 10, top 50 on the iTunes podcast charts. And it becomes sort of self-fulfilling. Here's an example. I've mentioned this before, and people have told me this, but here's a perfect example of it. This is an ad on in between a YouTube show. And if you look down there, you can see that he runs his whole ad show as an ad on YouTube. And you've got to skip past it now, of course. All right, people are going to do that. But a lot of times what people do is they run their YouTube and they use it like the radio.
Yep. Right.
And they're not sitting in front of it.
They're cleaning their house.
They're cleaning their house. Yeah. They're, you know, we got guys, working construction. Maybe they're like working in a shop or something like this, or in the mail,
commissary.
In the commissary or in the post office. And this comes on as an ad and just runs and runs and runs until somebody says, hey, what's going on? Sam's become so much more shrill just in the past couple of minutes. And that's how they get, you know, time watched up and they just pay for it. But they have a new tact that they're taking. And this is going to blow the doors off.
Oh, my God. That's not a parody thumbnail?
So this is
This is a real thumbnail. Ben versus Fortnite. And it's got like that playful, almost like Nickelodeon at night font.
Yeah. Yes. He's doing the Tim Pool thing where it's like time to appeal to
groom
the
core
constituency of 14-year-old boys.
Time to groom children for fascism.
And he
looks cool, though.
Oh, you
Here
think,
it is. Yeah, These guys good. Are going crazy. Here's a little promo of it. Zoom in a little bit.
Oh, someone else killed him. He got ran over by a car.
Wow.
It's time!
So you have to explain to me what this game
okay,
is.
Okay, pause it for one second. I just want to say, like, this seems like a regular feature now. Like, they've built all that, like, intro stuff to it, right?
Like, the kids are Twitch streaming, playing video games.
That's what they're coming to Twitch streaming 6 years too late?
Yeah.
Looks like it.
I'm going to pull it up. We got the full
Hold on.
Ben is the answer. Ben is the answer to Hassan.
We should get you to debate him through Fortnite, and you just have Saul control the Fortnite.
Listen, I can play Fortnite.
That's about here. Yeah, this looks fun.
This looks fun.
Down the other way. The controls are in.
Yeah, so far I'm doing great.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're doing great. It's great. Way better than I did.
You're really good at falling.
This isn't flying. This is falling with style.
It's also going to flailing.
Just like socialist policy, it's all fun and games until you hit the ground.
Exactly.
Oh! Oh my God, it's like a parody of itself.
Just like socialist policy. This is me off the cuff.
How many hundreds of thousands of people did they get to watch this? Scroll down a little bit.
You know what's funny?
45,000 people. Wow.
I was talking to a Gaza doctor.
Yeah. You know what's funny, honestly, is I don't know if I could think of a more uptight person to be playing video games in the right-wing media ecosystem. Like, the whole vibe is supposed to be like you're hanging with your friend. I mean, I don't think Ben Shapiro could act casual alone in his pajamas at his house, let alone in front of a camera playing Fortnite.
Well, I got all the kids together, and I'm wearing my stylish overcoat.
Here, he's warmed up here. Let's see how he is 10 minutes into it.
He's just been hiding.
Give him a chance.
This is a good strategy, the hiding.
You've almost made it to the top 25%. If we win a game just by just staying away from everybody, that would probably be...
I coined a new strategy at that point.
You realize you've been doing this wrong your whole life.
I have been. I've been like just throwing my control at the TV.
Oh
my God, the editing.
Oh.
Remember, that used to be Brett Cooper's thing too.
It's Family Guy's fault.
No, but it's also like they are trying so hard to keep your attention.
Yes.
Well,
Family Guy cut away.
Yeah, just they think we're all so stupid that we have to see the
joke. I'm glad they didn't use the Dutch angle on that. So.
Yeah.
God.
Social conservative fiscal liberal Shapiro versus Fortnite is like what if Conan's Clueless Gamer was boring and not funny.
I loved Clueless Gamer.
I love how humiliating this is for Ben. Like, this is, he thinks so highly of himself that the idea of him playing video games on camera when he thought of himself as a serious commentary.
This is
going
to go viral.
I just love what that's probably doing to his psyche, if nothing else.
I bet Sam playing Red Dead Redemption could get more views than 45,000.
Mm. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Your, like, joke spam calls probably do.
The joke
five,
spam
six,
calls
seven,
the, probably the highest performing video we ever
this?
Had.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
3 million views on one of those.
Yeah.
Emmy, I just want to see you too in other places. Like, whenever you guys are doing, like, the Mallory McMurrow thing,
right,
or the Sam reacting from home, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views.
It just throws people off, I guess. Yeah. But not with Ben. No one wants
no,
to see
nobody
him.
Wants to see Ben anywhere.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Emmy in Seattle. Hey, I'm Martine. Since I lost my job, I'm having my subscription end. I first want to say I love you and thank you for everything that you do to bring the news through an unabashedly proud leftist perspective. I don't have any more chances to ask for a shofar, but hopefully one of you will see this today and might read my request this time to have a shofar to help me to get by this miserable time. Well, first off, Emmy, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. You will not be locked out of the show for finances. That is a longstanding policy here. But with that said, you'll still get a shofar. So it's really,
yes,
this is a net positive for you.
Email us and make sure that you like,
yeah,
put
just put
your...
in the subject line, membership request.
Yep.
And give us time. And if for whatever reason, don't worry about canceling it. We'll refund anything, any charges that take place, you know, before we get you set up. In the meantime, sorry you're going through this. Evil woke communists. It's not really the fun half until we see Sam hit a sick clip on Counter-Strike. Let's see here. What else we got?
Because that's $200 of in the economy.
I think number 18 would be good.
Oh, yeah. This is Thomas Massie. He's declared his candidacy in 2028 for Congress, but he's just doing that to be able to maintain fundraising. He doesn't know exactly what he's going to run for. And it's basically a fundraising trick. And I think he's, discussed that. But this is what he plans to do. I mean, this is just, yes. I would love to see any Republican wreak as much havoc as they can before they're out the door. You know who could have done something like this?
Hmm.
What was the name of this? She's like very...
forget it.
No.
Just CrossFit lady.
Yeah.
Brown?
Nah.
Dog the Bounty Tan. Hunter. I mean...
If only she had stayed in Congress, but she had better things to do.
Okay. Media time.
Brown, right?
Merger to Brown, yes.
Right, because when the grass gets...
grass dies, it turns brown.
Yeah, you have really nailed it. You should be president.
Congressman, we're almost out of time. Couple more here. I want to ask about the Epstein files. As you've noted, the speech and debate clause actually protects you from being prosecuted for whatever you say on the floor of the House. You have named names in the Epstein files in the past. Can we expect you to name more names in the coming weeks and months?
Yes. Todd Blanche is violating the law. There's still millions of files they haven't released. We know from talking to the victims' lawyers that their own 302 forms haven't been released. We know the files have been over-redacted. I have released at least three names of billionaires who are implicated in this. I don't think it's possible to get to convictions with Todd Blanche at the top and with the FBI director, Kash Patel, at the top, because they've effectively both perjured themselves by saying that there's nobody else in the files. Even Melania doesn't believe that. The First Lady knows that Jeffrey Epstein didn't act alone. And here's the great thing, Kristen. Whether I'm in Congress or not, the Epstein Files Transparency Act is a law, and it goes on for years. So if we can't get this attorney general and this FBI director to do the right thing, the next ones who take those seats are obligated by law to release the files that these individuals are not releasing now.
So it doesn't sound like he's necessarily going to read them off, but he might. Right?
I mean, it sounds like he is going to tease that out potentially for some fundraising thing. But also, I would guess, you know, the victims would prefer that it's more formal.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Zohran Mamdani. He is the mayor of New York City. and had a big announcement today on housing policy. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Vegland on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the mayor of New York City, Zohram Mamdani. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the program. I will let you guys just do this since you know you need to do it, and then we can move on to other more important things.
Yeah, it's pretty important. I told Sam I would resign from the show in protest if I did not get the first question, so... How about them Knicks, baby? How about them Knicks? How about them Knicks?
It just feels like the city is alive. And yeah. I got to say, even for a Knicks fan like yourself who has to host for the Boston Celtics fan, you can still feel that excitement and that joy.
I can. But I mean, you know what? 99. Every day.
We haven't been here since 99.
Not since 99, and he just tries to sap my joy away with all of his Celtics fandom. But when I knew you were coming on the show today, I said, I have to get the first question because I've got to ask you, all right, which starter do you think is not getting enough love, and which bench player stands out to you right now as giving the team a spark?
Okay, well, you know, I got to say, Josh Hart, you know, the game that I went to, Josh Hart really put the team on his back.
Yep.
And... he's incredible. Like the tenacity, he's just fighting for everything. Sometimes I'm a little worried that he's going to get a tech, but he's doing incredible work. Obviously we all love Captain Clutch, but in terms of somebody who can always use a little more love, I'll say Josh Hart. And last night I was very, very excited to see Three Awara get a few minutes coming off the bench. It's great to be in a position where we're 20, 30, 40 points up and everybody's getting some minutes. That's what we want to see.
Yes, bench players showing out. Tyler Kolek was able to hit some threes, and
He was cooking there. And you know, I'm interested to see if we can explore legislation changing laundromats to laundromats, just as a kind of
nomenclature
for the city.
11 for 12 from three over the past four games, and one more. Jose Alvarado, New York native, right?
GTA baby.
Yes. So we shout out to Jose Alvarado. Sam's completely checked out.
I just want, as a follow-up, why did you just curse the Mets and not the Knicks, too?
You know, the Mets beat the Yankees. We're going to take that.
I appreciated that. But I'm waiting for football season. All right. Yeah, yeah. Let's move through. You had a big announcement today on housing. I want to talk about this. A couple other things I want to talk about. But give us some of the details. A, what problems we have in the city in terms of housing. I think they're obvious for you know, some of them are obvious in terms of just the sheer expense and homelessness. But what specifically were you looking at today?
You know, I talk a lot about the cost of living crisis in our city, and housing is the number one driver of that crisis. And so today we announced a new plan called Block by Block, and it has three specific planks. The first one is that we're building 200,000 new, truly affordable, permanently rent-stabilized homes over the next 10 years. We're going to do that while preserving 200,000 affordable homes. This is the biggest commitment that a mayoral administration has made when it comes to affordable housing in the city. We're doing all of this while also investing in the tenants of today. And what I mean by that is that too often housing law, code enforcement, these are things that are taken as suggestions as opposed to requirements in our city. We're going to make it easier for tenants to report these kinds of violations. We're also then going to make it easier for us to hold those bad landlords accountable. Now, whether that means that for the first time in city history, starting October 1st, the city's going to start to investigate every single heat complaint made across the five boroughs, or it means that tenants are actually going to be able to reschedule an appointment with an HPD inspector when they don't happen to be home at the time that the inspector comes. We're showing that it's possible to both build more housing than we've seen in the city and do so while protecting the tenants who already live in the city. All of this as we invest $5.6 billion into public housing in New York City. And that's more money than any mayor has done in decades. And we're doing it because for far too long, public housing has been a footnote in our conversations around housing in the city. We want to unlock that dignity that was at the cornerstone of Fiorella LaGuardia's vision of public housing when he first brought it forward in New York City.
And does the city have a mechanism? I imagine there must be, and I don't know how it's been done comprehensively, of landlords that have high level of complaints, that where you have so much problems unaddressed. I mean, because those two, I mean, between like affordability and just the lack of leverage, yes, habitability and the lack of leverage that tenants have against big landlords in that way, they will just drag it out. Every day they can avoid doing a repair is basically a net gain in terms of the way that they perceive this. So, does the city have a sense of like what the scope of enforcement's going to be and then where the leverage grows after that?
Absolutely. One of the things that we're encouraging tenants to do as part of our block by block plan is to form tenant associations in this city. And that when they do so, the city will also provide a basement to roof inspection of the entire building as part of that formation so that it can be very clear as to what the violations are in any given building. Additionally, we're going to make it easier to hold bad landlords accountable, not only in the manner in which we've done, we've held them accountable to the tune of $65 million just over the past 6 months alone, but also in the question of when we have to transfer stewardship from one of those kinds of landlords to a nonprofit or a community land trust, or even in some cases to tenants. And this is a plan that at its heart has a vision for the city where tenants are not being pushed out, whether by rising rents or by the violation of housing codes.
Can you speak about how seniors would be impacted here? I saw that part of your proposal here includes a commitment to more senior homes.
Absolutely. That's at the heart of this is how do we actually deliver the kind of affordability that too often has just been hoped for as opposed to actually been acted upon? And what I mean by that is there's a program that we have called ELLA, Extremely Low Level Affordability. It's at a cornerstone of a lot of how our housing department is going to deliver a lot of these homes. But to your point, for seniors, you know, I remember when I was running for mayor, I went to a senior center in Brownsville and I met a senior there who told me that they'd been on the waiting list for 8 years and that they said if they had to wait one more year, they would actually leave the city because they couldn't afford to do so any longer. So this 200,000 target is going to include a significant number of senior housing. And as part of it, it's also going to include us taking an axe to the time that so often New Yorkers have to wait to move into a home. Because we see right now in New York City, on average, it takes 7 months after a housing is completed for someone to move into that housing. So it's a lot of also the regulatory framework that we're taking a hard look at to ensure that this is going to be the fastest possible process.
How do you fix NYCHA? I mean, it's a huge agency and it is been, I think, perennially under-resourced. How do you scale that back up?
I think the first thing you do is actually try, because what we've seen for many years is that the scale of capital needs have been used as a justification for administrations to not do anything. Because what is said time and again as well, NYCHA needs $80 billion. Anything that we do is just a drop in the bucket. We need to wait for the federal government. We know that after Reagan made cuts to public housing, that federal administrations, whether Democrat or Republican, have allowed NYCHA to fall into disrepair. So the idea of waiting any longer is not acceptable, whether for myself or for NYCHA residents across the five boroughs. And so what we are doing here is showing that the city is going to commit itself in a way that it hasn't in decades to start to show what it looks like to invest in NYCHA residents. $5.6 billion obviously doesn't cover an $80 billion deficit, What it does show, however, is that there is finally a party at the table that is serious about the needs of NYCHA residents. And we're going to show that not only in increasing the support that we are providing to critical services like elevator repairs or the turnover of vacant units, but also by showing that we can actually create new revenue streams for NYCHA that will be permanent for years to come, so that we can actually get out of this spiral that we have been in for so many years, and then say to the federal government and our partners that we are looking to build with, that we actually need them to come to the table and start to partner with us at the same level, if not far greater than what they've ever done before.
So the idea is that some measure of success begets more success down the road, when you can show people that we're not throwing this money into a bottomless pit. We're actually getting somewhere in terms of improvement, and we need more.
Exactly. And I think it's showing that we also can't afford to wait any longer when NYCHA residents are being forced to put up with conditions that are simply unacceptable.
All right. One more quick question, because I know you get time, and we spend a lot of time on the basketball stuff.
My man is bitter.
I am very bitter.
Every day.
I've been bitter for a year since the injury in the series last year. But that's not the point.
They win enough. Like, he can't even give this to us. It's ridiculous.
The federal government has been relentless. We've been talking about how their destruction of agencies. We're getting millions of people losing their Medicaid. SNAP cuts. Can you go through at least in the context of SNAP? I know there's a direct thing that's being done, but SNAP and just more broadly, what can the city do when the federal government has basically pulled the rug out from under the supports that so many people have relied on?
I think it's obviously incredibly difficult for our city as a whole when we have federal policy that is looking to take an axe to the social safety net for so many New Yorkers. And we've talked about the fact that it's the most expensive city in the country. These are the kinds of actions that make it even more difficult to afford to live here. SNAP benefits, this is something that the key demographic here that we are so worried about are New Yorkers between the ages of 18 to 24, their ability to keep affording groceries. We're telling every New Yorker that if you are not sure of your SNAP status, to please make sure that you're actually checking your HRA app to see that you've actually enrolled. Because if you are working at this time, or if you are enrolled in training, or if you are volunteering, there are ways for you to continue to receive your SNAP benefits. And yet what we are worried about is whether it's SNAP, whether it's healthcare, there are so many different ways in which federal policy is making it harder for the city to succeed. And what I've said to the president directly is that my vision is of a partnership with the federal government, much in the same way that who I believe was the greatest mayor of all time, Firo LaGuardia, in this city, was able to build that relationship with FDR and delivering those kinds of New Deal programs across the five boroughs.
All right. Well, I know you guys can say your Knicks stuff, and then we'll wrap up.
I think we did enough.
You know, I can't wait to talk to you during the finals, my friend.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go on about Wemby right now, but I mean, it's good luck.
I'm not saying anything. Yeah. I'm not jinxing anything. No. I'm just riding the vibe one day at a time.
We're just here enjoying the vibe and listening to these Celtic tears.
I'm drinking
them. Mayor, thanks so much for coming on. My son wanted to say hi, and he appreciated that last snow day. He wanted me to tell you that.
All the best. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
18 championships. All right. See you.
Yeah. We know.
There we go.
The only Knicks fan in this office.
You know what I was thinking, actually, that this would be great if we were to put some flags up in here. Like a full-on replica.
That's the priority. Right.
Well, we'd probably have to go Knicks because it would only be one, and that's about how much space we have.
Yeah, but it'd be good for sound. For sound, only one. If we had the 18 flags up here,
they've won more than one.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's funny. Like the Celtics, like I don't know, like half your championships are when people like whistled for the halftime entertainment.
Oh, you mean when basketball was basketball and not like right. About, let's bring the gymnasts on because we can't get people to come into the... No, that was not... We didn't.
Throwing chess passes.
No.
He does have a point.
Maybe.
We have about 9 from the good era.
I mean, the Knicks are just qualified entirely, and the Wolves haven't gotten there either, so we don't really have a leg to stand on by that methodology.
By the way, if the Thunder win, I'm full Knicks.
Look,
fan.
It's like we're talking about with the government. It's easier to destroy than it is to build up.
I hate the Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, to Matt's point, like, I'm actually not going to talk about it. I'm completely neutral about the outcome.
And Dark Zen. Soul, as Celtics fan, will you flag, you hang, be the Confederate variety? Excuse me. I think you'll find if you do just the slightest bit of digging, the Celtics were actually pioneers in terms of integrating the NBA.
First team in the entire league.
So.
Yeah, some of the fans.
You know how Boston's
the only... The fans! Now, I'm not speaking about the fans!
You know, racism only exists in Boston.
It wasn't because they took a vote with the crowd.
Right.
That's true. I'm not defending...
I'm sure my grandfather was horribly offended by the integration.
Yeah, I still love that joke about 30 Rock where Jack's mom in Boston went to the church of Our Lady of Reluctant Integration. It's just so good.
Exactly. Sam Function Cedar. When are you going to invite Rogan for a debate? You can kick it off by playing back his calling you an effing dork and waiting for him to apologize. Don't forget the exasperation. That's not happening.
I don't know if you... standing open invite for about half a decade now.
You don't really invite Rogan places.
I don't think it works that way.
Right.
Yeah. It's pretty insulated.
But it was a reference to Jillian Michaels, and we have some Jillian Michaels has been busy. She's really getting out there. And I guess she's decided not to. We didn't get the.
I can find that.
The two friends?
I think I have the time.
We can do that later.
We have that.
We can do that later. Here's Jillian Michaels. She's on Matan Evans' stream. Now, I don't know if I fully get the Matan Evans thing.
You will once you watch this.
No, I've watched him before. I've seen like one or two other clips. And it's sort of like, I don't know where you would place it, but it was, I found it very, very interesting. Is he in L.A.? Do they do this in L.A. or does she fly to somewhere?
I'm not sure where they do that, but his whole brand is like, give him enough rope.
You know what? She really doesn't know much about much. But here she is. She what she does know is, when you don't know the answer, the best thing to do is just laugh.
I said, what's your political opinion? You said common sense.
It is my political opinion.
It is absolutely a teller of where somebody stands.
Be specific. Be specific. What's your political opinion? Which issue?
Israel.
Honestly, I don't think Israel is the root of all evil. I'm sorry.
You don't mind Israel?
I don't mind Israel. Here's my position on Israel. Everything that people take umbrage with Israel, I completely appreciate and understand, but I just wish they would apply those standards unilaterally. So if you're pissed off about money and politics, now listen.
Nobody mispronounces words more often than I, and sometimes you use words incorrectly, but she uses it incorrectly like so many times in this, and I don't want to be pedantic because that's not really the issue because it really is. The gist of what she's saying is really the bullshit. Mm-hmm. But the word she is looking for is not unilaterally. I don't know exactly what the word she's looking for. Equally, maybe?
Yeah. In balance?
You apply these standards equally across the board, or maybe. But it is not unilaterally. Unilaterally means you're going alone.
Look how Israel behaves. They act unilaterally.
Right.
Although
that's in the back of her mind.
They attacked Iran with the United States. So they weren't unilateral in that. But
the other six countries.
But Israel.
Exactly.
The way she says it, too, it's like, I don't believe that you don't have an opinion about Israel if you're saying it that way. Seems like.
I didn't catch that.
It sounds a little like that. And that's another thing I've noticed right-wing people doing now because that no one can defend the genocide. So they'll just be like, I don't like Israel. Or I've never loved Israel. It's like, that's not the question. This is about how we orient our foreign policy.
Oh, you don't think
policy.
That Israel's the root of all evil? You think evil comes from other places, too? Is that possible?
Yes. Thanks for that straw man, Jillian. Honestly, I don't think Israel is the root of all evil. I'm sorry.
You don't mind Israel?
I don't mind Israel. Here's my position on Israel.
everything that people take umbrage with Israel, I completely appreciate and understand, but I just wish they would apply those standards unilaterally. So if you're pissed off about money in politics, then you should also be pissed off about Saudi and Qatar and China and all those other lobbies. Apply it unilaterally. If you're pissed off about the wall between Israel and Palestine, that's totally fine, but you should also be pissed off about
I'm sorry. The problem for her is that it's not equivalent. Those countries have to register as foreign lobbying organizations in this country if they are lobbying our government. Israel and AIPAC does not have to do that because it doesn't function as a foreign entity. So it's a wrong, it's an incorrect analysis to apply unilaterally to her argument. That's part of why the right-wing critiques of Israel are so shallow. It's because they talk about it as a foreign infiltrating entity as opposed to an outgrowth of the United States. That it's they have it wrong in the sequencing.
I will also say that we have been for a long time against the billions upon billions of dollars in aid that we have provided for China on an annual basis.
Yes.
And so therefore, of course, that is why
the China lobby,
we have been so adamant that we should not be providing weapons to China. Let's hear. She goes on.
She's just mad at the hypocrisy of the left.
Yeah.
The problem with Bill Cosby wasn't
Why are you specifically talking about, like, nobody ever talked about the Uyghurs. Nobody ever talked about, nobody ever demonized Russia when they invaded Ukraine. I mean, what are you talking about?
I mean, she's
insane.
Got a full plate of global affairs on her mind.
Oh, right. nobody was mad at Saudi Arabia. In fact, Biden, before he turned, Biden had sanctioned Saudi Arabia quite a bit at the beginning of the administration. But continue.
She's just a person trying to heal all the suffering in the world. All the suffering.
Yes, I just want fairness.
Lobbies, apply it unilaterally. If you're pissed off about the wall between Israel and Palestine, that's totally fine. But you should also be pissed off about the wall between Palestine and Egypt. And
pause it for 1 second. Do you know who controls the wall between Palestine and Egypt? It is a country called Israel.
Yeah, huh? Why is
they
that?
They have control of the I mean, was Egypt? Do people think that Egypt had the option of allowing free passage outside of Gaza without Israel signing off?
And we also have propped up the Sisi regime in many ways because of his pliance about this kind of stuff.
But I will also add, like, the idea that Israel was going to push all of the Palestinians out into the Sinai Desert is a little bit problematic. It's not like, you know, we would accept indigenous people being pushed out of Alaska and all streaming across the border in Detroit or something. Like, no problem. Just,
Palestinians in tunnels with their own excrement. Just apply it evenly. That's all I ask. Call something that you think is bad.
Sounds like you're just finding a way to justify it. Saying these guys also do bad things.
I think it's all terrible. I don't want to see anyone
so
die.
You think Israel is terrible, but other people are too?
I don't think Israel is terrible.
You said it's all terrible.
I think when someone dies, it's terrible.
You see what I mean when I say you're not really willing to say anything?
I just told you what I think. I'm telling you what I think. I do not
you're
want...
You're like the perfect example of an old school conservative that just won't say
I'm
nothing.
I'm an old school liberal. Yeah. You don't know. You don't even know. That's what I mean.
That's what old.
That's what I mean.
That's what
old
style.
No, an old school conservative is Dick Cheney. It's like a rhino.
You seem pretty pro-war.
You know, again, I hate to be pedantic, but in what way is Dick Cheney a rhino? In what way is Dick Cheney?
He didn't support Trump.
The
duh.
Former chief of staff Richard Nixon. The former Republican congressman, I don't think he was a senator, the vice president for 8 years. He was also chosen he also worked in the George Herbert Walker Bush administration as well. I don't know if there's anybody more associated with Republican politics over that time. In what way is he a rhino? Like, you know, it's really beginning to occur to me that when Jillian Michaels decided to do this, to go from a fat shamer on The Biggest Loser, or a coach, into opining about politics, it never occurred to her to do any prep on what was going on. She just hears a
read
word.
Read a book.
Yeah, read a book.
But maybe one that was published after I was born.
Exactly. One that's not from 1991. I mean, you should read books from 91 and from the 80s and the 70s, but don't stop there. Read some from the aughts and maybe in the teens.
Also, she's not, I'm not a Republican. I'm not Dick Cheney. He's a rhino.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
You know that thing that old liberals call people all the time? Is they
rhinos.
Call them rhinos.
Yeah.
Open conversation is the way of humans connecting.
Mm. Go ahead.
But an old school, no, an old school conservative is Dick Cheney. It's like a rhino. It's
just throwing out
pretty
words.
Pro-war.
You think?
Yeah, that's how you come off. You just defended Israel for like 5 minutes.
I did not. I said.
Pretty much.
Said she's laughing now. This is like this is her nervous tick.
And you said that it's all terrible.
People dying, I think, is terrible.
Even if it's Israel's fault. You see how you're not willing to go there?
Yeah, she's laughing.
It's like you have like a muzzle on.
Here's what I would say. I think what happened on October 7th was hideous. And when
I didn't ask about October 7th.
You don't go hand in hand?
Well, if I asked about it, then I'd expect an answer there.
All right. Well, my opinion is...
She's having so much fun. She can't help but laugh.
That didn't happen, obviously. And I wish that everything that did not happen as well.
That's a real laugh. That's not out of...
Oh, my God.
Like that, right? That's a real one. Something's very funny happening.
I'm telling you the truth. I don't think that they're
vulnerable. I love him.
I don't. I do think that horrible things happen. And I think both sides have done things to each other throughout history. I'm certainly not an expert on it.
Are they a sponsor of your podcast?
They are now. But I'm more than willing to open up the books.
You would let them?
Would let them sponsor the... No. Open up the books for an audit. How much money are we talking, though, actually?
Would you let APAC sponsor you?
If it's not $30, I might. How much?
How many views do you get per show?
It depends. Sometimes it's only like 50,000. But sometimes it's a couple hundred thousand. So
what does it average out of?
How much do you think I can make? Hold on. If I pull analytics, give me 1 second. You're telling me you're better at this than me.
It's not the right.
Give me a second. Tell me how much I can get. Where's my studio?
How do I change, topic? Let's see.
She should fake a phone call just to get out of this.
Why would you?
I hope he's going in.
I know.
I'm not going to do it. So if it's like $3 million.
It's like $75.
$75?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to. No.
But you're already doing all the stuff they want. They're basically just throwing you $75.
Nah. I still don't think so.
They say, we appreciate all you say about Israel. All we want to do is just give you money. We know you're going to keep doing it anyways.
Yeah, but then there's a paper trail.
I don't want to even... This is now getting...
She's riffing.
Yeah.
She's pondering it kind of sincerely, though.
No, she's just trying to figure out how the hell she gets out of this conversation.
She's trying to filibuster.
Yeah.
But the fact that she wouldn't even come out and just be like, I don't know, these are my actual authentic opinions seems a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, I think. Look, it's a very uncomfortable place right now to be if you are a right winger.
Yeah,
and
I don't think that she's probably currently bought by Zionist money. I don't know that for sure, but I do think that there are a lot of people that don't want to foreclose that possibility.
I doubt that she's getting paid directly by Israel, but I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, look, there's a lot of production. She has quite a production team, it seems to me, just based upon
right.
Who went through all our shows and looked at any time that we were critical of her
this.
Over the course of a year. I mean, it was like 20 minutes worth of footage, and it was all like down to the minute. Now, maybe you can search transcripts, whatnot. I mean, but it takes a little bit of time. I would imagine she had sponsors. There's somebody's underwriting her show. Maybe she's doing it herself, but I imagine she has sponsors. And it's not necessarily that those sponsors are like, here, I'm sponsoring you to say stuff pro-Israel. But it's also conceivable that, like, I know my sponsor, they are really more interested in their, health supplements, but they also really care about Israel.
Well, right. Genocide coffee.
Exactly.
You also got to think about what her actual friends think. And Dave Rubin, you know, would be upset if she said that Israel was bad.
Do we have that clip?
Oh, let me get it right here.
But she's, by the way, I meant to point this out earlier, when she talks about her liberalism, it's just as if she just read, maybe the second book she's ever read was Burn This Book by Dave Rubin, and she's just copying Dave Rubin's shtick from years ago. Like,
I'd be very curious as to what she is liberal about. Now, I know that she, and she has said, well,
she wants to be able to get married as a woman.
She wants to, and
but rights for me, but not for thee, is the most conservative thing possible, so.
Oh, yes. Here is, here is a clip from, is this from Actual Friends or is it on Jillian Michaels' show?
This is Actual
Friends. This is Actual Friends.
Okay, and it's Actual Friends, but are there only two friends left now? Have they lost all their other friends?
I mean, you can just have two friends.
Okay. They're actual friends. But they start off with like four or five, and they just keep losing friends.
You know your friends that you constantly have to say are your actual friends over and over again.
Yeah, you guys are my actual friends.
Actual friends.
Here they are talking about...
is Rupert's hair darker every single time we pull up a clip from him?
I mean, it is just pen ink at this point.
He's just fine at finding... Rudy Giuliani.
It's like Roy Orbison.
Same barber as Rudy Giuliani. Go ahead.
Conditions for them to succeed, and Donald Trump is trying to do that.
I want to address the gay part for a moment, because I've actually had a lot of conversations with Christian nationalists. And I got to tell you, Dave, they may not be for gay marriage. Matt Walsh arguably being the most aggressive about gay families.
And by may not.
Having said that, I've spoken to
vehemently
Johnson,
against it,
who couldn't have been more lovely. I've watched your conversations with Charlie Kirk, who said, listen, I'm a Christian. America's not a theocracy. I wouldn't want to end your marriage. I've spoke to Andrew Wilson, who he's like, listen, you know, this is a power game and I want to win it. But couldn't have been more lovely to me outside of our position about that. And he was still lovely to me even when we were talking about it. My point being, you can have conversations with conservatives and they can say, I'm against gay marriage. I'm against gay families. I don't believe in it from a religious perspective. But they are always civil. They never wage ad hominem attacks. They're never aggressive. They're never cruel. Whereas what I found so ironic in watching so many clips of Sam Cedar just like hurl his pejoratives at me. He made fun of gays at least three times. One is a clip of you and I. One is a clip of Benny and I. And one is a clip of Crowder and I. And it was like, I'm not trying
just
to be a dick.
Those are three gay guys.
Like
that's it.
Butthead, like, is that the meaning of the gay straight alliance? They're both gay.
It's a great joke.
I was shocked. And I'm thinking the worst attacks, the most vicious, the most aggressive, the most personal, are from the Brian Shapiros, the Sam Cedars. So don't talk to me about gay.
I don't care about any of those guys, but what I would say is
sure.
The problem is when you're a lefty and you believe that immutable characteristics are the most important thing, which is clearly that's what woke is. So if you buck that trend, right, they need their gays to be oppressed in a certain way. You need your blacks to be oppressed in a certain way. You have to push out white people. You have to push out Jews. Like, you have to push out Asians. You have to keep everybody in that thing. So they consider you and I to basically be, I don't know,
Uncle
sexuality
Tom's the gay
traitors or something like that.
Uncle Tom's the gay community.
You know, Jillian, I'll give you a great example of this, and I sort of blame you for it, but I did that ridiculous Surrounded show the other day, and I'm not sure when it's going up, but it was, you know, basically like MAGA guy.
Okay.
You know why some people, us included, are mocking you for that? Is because you support a political party that doesn't believe that you should have equal rights. I understand that Jillian seemed to speak with some conservatives that were nice to her. And perhaps that's changed your mind about the politics of it, but
well, here's the point: is that like Jillian and I would imagine Dave Rubin, and they treat what we do here as a job as if they were a spokesperson for a soap or something.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I've met with these guys. They're completely professional. You know, and they come in and they're very nice. They're personally very nice, and I love working with them, and it's great. Now, one of the problems is they want to literally make the laws so that I cannot have a child and that I cannot be married. They want to strip me of my rights, but they are polite. I would imagine, like the idea that that's the issue. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I am a bully. Now, I'm not just a bully to Jillian. Or to Dave Rubin, I bully my kids. I bully the people who went down. But the point is, like, no, we're here to talk about policy and politics. And you're willing to say, you know what? It doesn't matter that Ben Shapiro wouldn't come to my wedding. You know, that's a personal thing, too. But it's not just that Ben Shapiro wouldn't go to your wedding. It's that Ben Shapiro does everything in his power to make it impossible for you to have a husband or a wife, to have a family, to live that life. They do everything they possible. Their project is to do that. And whether they're like that, even if they said, like, well, I just do that on air. In my real life, I don't really care if gays, but it's just whatever, which is not what they do. But the point being that it is, we make an active choice to say it is far more important that people have equal rights and that certain marginal communities or non-marginal communities, for that matter, are not denied their rights rather than be polite.
But that's what matters to them. There, when you say take away your rights, Dave intrinsically understands that he can still be a very wealthy guy and still have two children and have a husband, and Jillian Michaels can be a very wealthy woman. She's married to a woman, right? And be okay. But we're worried about everybody else who doesn't have FaceTime with Ben Shapiro and Charlie Kirk and other conservative influencers that may be nice to you interpersonally. It's about everybody else who doesn't have those resources, who is queer and may want to marry somebody who's of their same gender or may want to transition. That is who we're supposed to be representing, and you guys are representing your own personal interests.
Yeah, and it does not bother me one iota that despite the fact that she's gay, that Jillian Michaels supports people who would take her rights away. I don't care about her as a person.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't care about Dave Rubin as a person. I'm sorry, I don't. I only know these people because of what they spew out into public. And they should judge me in the exact same way, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be friendly with them. I wasn't rude to her, at least not off camera. I
find it so much easier to have somebody on whose work I respected, but who personally I couldn't stand and yes, who was rude to me, than somebody who I really liked personally, but couldn't stand the work that they did and the world they were trying to create. Like, how was this even a conversation?
Yeah, it's a bizarre sort of inversion of what they should be doing. But that's, you know, that has been my experience with right wingers, mm-hmm, is that, even back when we were doing this as a radio show, I've told this story about Janine and I being at the DNC in 2004. And I think it was Larry Elder or something, who's a right-wing talk radio guy.
The Sage of Inglewood, right?
Yeah, and he said something like, you know, we'll leave it on the field. You know, like...
Right.
Like, you know, we're off work right now. And my attitude is like, dude, I'm not in this business to meet friends in the biz.
I'm offended that Jillian and Dave assumed we were all straight. They don't know.
They
don't know.
And the idea,
everything.
I mean, they're actual friends.
Right.
I'm not actual friends with Jillian or actual friends with Dave. And I actually, to be also honest, I should be upfront about this. I don't have any respect for them as people.
Yeah.
Because of what they do. That's all.
And to be actual friends with somebody, you would have to respect them, right?
It would start with the respect. I respect people that I don't necessarily am friendly with, but that's probably a greater number of people.
I don't know if they have the same basis for actual friendship in terms of respect.
I think it's like, if you're nice to me, I'm nice to you, and then we just forget about what our life's mission is.
What do you
call that?
And that
is to disempower as many marginalized people as possible.
What do you call that when it's an exchange more?
Transactional?
I'd call it unilateral.
A unilateral transaction? Oh, geez. It's 2:40. Galactic and Boogers. Larry Elder was a mentor of Stephen Miller. Oh, I didn't know that. Henry, would you play Red Dead 2 just as a fishing simulator?
It's a fun way to play it.
I don't even know what that means.
Me neither.
You can fish in a really granular way. In the,
you know, right, I mean, here's the thing. Is that I played a little bit with Saul. And I just like, I'm not from the...
Sam doesn't like the open world games.
No. I want a mission. I'm from the, like, my gameplay was 80s and 90s. And so it's like, you give me a limited amount of resources. You give me a mission to finish. If I don't do it within three tries, I die and I get to start over again. None of this, like, I wander around and visit the general store to see what they have in there. I don't care. I got a mission to accomplish.
You don't want to live in the world?
No, no. I find it really unhelpful. I mean, I'm trying to. I told Saul, like, I'll get you games, but I'm not getting you these games where you just wander around. You got to get on with it. Because when I genuinely believed that there was a value to playing these games. You assess what you have in terms of assets, and then you deploy those when necessary. You don't wander around and see, like, oh, look at there's the cabin. I mean,
there's the fence where you sell your stolen, you know, carriages.
Yeah, no, give me a break.
Okay.
Let's get in on this. So let's bring back GoldenEye.
You might need to check out, like, Evil West or something like that. That might be more your speed for a Western game.
I think so. All right, five of these and we're out of here. Tomo Flink. Happy Newsday Tuesday, folks. Here in Britain, Health Secretary Wes Streeting, week before last, Streeting, it's desperate to be prime minister and widely seen as a potential challenger to Starmer for the leadership of the Labour Party. The day before he resigned, Streeting was seen leaving the prime minister's official residence after a 17-minute meeting with Starmer, looking like he'd just been told to F off. Also last Sunday, Scottish former rugby player Scott Hastings died of cancer at the age of 61. My regards. Floyd the Barber. Even with Fetterman, would you rather have him given him a shot in the Senate or Dr. Oz? Same thing with Plattner. You want Collins again, or is it better to give him the chance? Yeah. Of course. Of course. Ad hominem. It really was a primary, you know, issue. Ad hominem. So glad Sam has a new co-host. Hopefully Emma has a better work ethic than Sam's previous co-host. She really abused that PTO policy. Oh, boy. She doesn't care. The Knicks one. That's the only thing that's important. Manny, internet is back in Iran today. We Iranian can contact with them. Oh, great.
That's good.
Jeff T. History over math, the subject taught almost exclusively by football coaches.
Hell yeah.
Todd from Raleigh. Was
also,
Andrew,
football coach taught my math class. So.
Was Andrew Cuomo able to make it to both the Knicks game and the Yankees fan? I think we found the new ESVN co-host. Tammy 420. Youth and high school sports parents are the biggest problem when it comes to the trans athlete issue. Youth sports has become so insanely profitable that it's become almost impossible for low-income working poor kids to even play. They've privatized every sport so much, like baseball, basketball. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I can't read all that, but yes.
That was already starting with places like, or sports like hockey when I was a kid, but now it's everything.
Yep.
Everything. All right, three more. Kowalski from Nebraska. Sam, I disagree with your assessment that rebuilding we have lost to Trump and Republicans is a bad thing. Nothing gives me more hope for the future than knowing we're going to have to replace everyone in government with people who have the desire to build things as opposed to maintaining the status quo. Sure, it's going to be painful, but what change isn't? Instead of having these old stagnant figures who refuse to change, we will have people with a mindset on making the country better starting off their 40-year-long careers. This is how you get generational change better. It's essential. What fixed China and after Mao and his stagnation nearly killed his country. Sometimes you have to lose in order to change.
I hear what you're saying, Kowalski, but I think it's different for like people like that make things run in our government than political figures, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking about politics. We're talking about civil servants who are in there. You know, you could say that maybe there needs to be some type of but, you know, the advantage that Mao had was that things could be a lot more unilateral.
I mean, you need a New Deal style mindset.
Yes. Bull Prog. What do you call Reuben with Clark Kent hair? Super Dave. Okay.
Clark Kent never spiked it like that.
Omega. Wow, that lady is the Joe Rogan of politicians for how she changed depending on whatever show she's in. Even if it's a show with some edgelord kid who stormed a stage at a gaming award show, I'm shocked she still has a show. And the final I am of the day, Nefarious Bread. I'll never understand what Rosario saw in that limp noodle. I mean, Michigan fist. Matt, Ryan, Emma, great job today. Folks, see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Are gonna kick in and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess I'm at a loss.